Welcome to Carrots and Suffering, a D&D Odyssey. My name is Nate, and I am a dungeon master of a few decades. This season, we are playing Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, and we are unofficial with no affiliation to Wizards of the Coast. Please leave us a rating and review if you enjoy our work. Last time on Carrots and Suffering, our heroes stand in for the gods and speak on their behalf as they decide the fate of the magic book that limits the divine power mortals can give to the gods. I am Astragarian Contessa, as I was at my death.
I am Astragarian Contessa, as I was at my peak. I bound together the Empire in a body of laws. I united all men under a banner of faith through war and diplomacy. I set the rules that bind our society and created 500 years of peace and prosperity, now threatened.
The mask continues. I learned the truth of the universe, that the gods are made by mortal belief, that our prayers give them life, our stories give them power. I led the Enclave to banish any god who committed acts of wrath against man.
Vecna challenges the Pantheon, this nation, and the order and peace we have established. He will undo the progress we have created. The book must be secured.
The gods have grown corrupt. Man has given them back the power of wrath, and they have begun to use it. Destroy the book. Let new gods be born untainted. We will start again.
This suggestion is chaos, and it allows the crimes of Vecna against the Empire to go unpunished. You are not the only god with control in a situation this big.
The translator, who's still sitting on the floor, says, "Enough!" And the room goes quiet, almost as if the gods are afraid. It's with a city they can't defend, and fearing the paladins will play into the hands of Vecna by attempting to reclaim it, our heroes convince the translator, head of the church and the known world, to destroy the city, rather than have it be a field for future battle.
What about abandoning ruins?
I don't think the followers of Brother Ambition care about ruins one way or another.
Then consider the city a ruin.
That's what this town is.
The righteous fall harder than the largest giants, and having learned the truth of the heavens, Xeris goes into a tailspin and finds a new way back to his sense of justice through vengeance.
Oh, is this a test? Is that it? I'm dead. And this is hell. And it's testing my faith.
Creighton will reach out and put a hand over Xeris's and be like, "You aren't dead. Well, you were for a minute. But you aren't dead now.
I assure you, you are not dead."
I think, Nodik, you're right about several points. And I'm tired of listening to others. I'm tired of being deceived by creatures who will do whatever they can to get what they need and what they want. And Nodig, my power is all that matters, so your support is meaningless. And you've made another point. All things die. And with that, I'm going to attempt to break the glaive over my knee.
Let's get into it. Hi, my name is Nate, and I will be your Dungeon Master.
Hi, I'm Mandy. I play Boulain, the Grave Domain Death Cleric, World Rocked.
Hi, I'm Claire, and I play Creighton, the Lunar/Divine Soul Sorcerer.
Hi, I'm Robert, and I play Xeris, and I don't know what I am anymore. What anything is, really.
Nice.
That was the perfect pitiful look, too, man.
Too bad we're an audio only.
It's okay. We'll describe everything.
There were tears. Tears.
I huck the pieces into the snow and sadly delete it from my character sheet.
Aww.
Wait, so are you still a warlock?
I am for now.
You get to decide. If you wish to be a warlock or not, actually.
If this is a good time to change, then I think I will.
Yeah, okay. It is a good time.
We just leveled, So
yeah,
it's a great time.
This campaign is all about Warlock Erasure.
Remember, kids, just say no to Warlock.
Yeah. Pack's
the bad deal. Bad deal, y'all.
For the part of the campaign where you were fighting dragons, that Warlock set of powers and the weapon were...
Yeah, that's true. That could have been pretty handy.
Mandy, what was the thing you wanted to do with Boulain?
Okay, well, she will give Creedon enough time to properly pass out, and then she will go to the suite that they've given us, and she will open the curtains on a window because it's probably covered in frost and condensation.
When you open the curtains on the window, you realize that this building is buried in a snowdrift. There's that much snow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it's cold.
But there probably is condensation on the window. That's important.
There is, yes.
All right. So she is going to sit on the floor before that window and take out her brazier and burn some incense and say a few revving herself up prayers. And then she is going to cast Commune, which gives her three questions direct to the Silent Judge.
All right.
For which she should get truthful answers. And she says, "My lady, are you unable to pursue your love of Sister Truth as long as you are serving your post as the goddess of death?"
She writes on the window, "Moderation required but unwelcome."
"Do you want to retire from your post as the goddess of death?"
The window takes enough time to refog back over. And then it writes, "Gods do not quit. They die or they remain."
And then she leans forward and she says, "What is the difference between you and me?"
"You live a life with free will. I only serve."
"Thank you, lady."
You feel a weird warmth, doubly weird because you are not in a warm place. You get the faint impression that your god really appreciated those questions.
She is not expecting an answer to this. She says out loud, "Has no one asked you before?"
And you don't get an answer.
And she doesn't get an answer for that. And then she's going to go do her 4-hour trance thing because she is also tired.
Okay.
Can I throw in one more short scene for Creedon as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I suppose chronologically this would happen before Creedon actually retires, like on her way back walking through the church up to the room. When she sees Eliana again, how are we pronouncing this name?
You get to decide.
Eliana? Is that what we're doing?
I was saying Eliana.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to do Eliana. I was pretty sure that was what it was.
Madam Young Miss Everchild.
Creedon wants to kind of walk up to her huddled in her blankets with her drink of water or whatever and put a hand on her shoulder. And she's a little drunk. She's got her bottle of vodka. But she says, "I wanted to apologize for it. I was rude to you before. We've all been through a lot, and I was raised under divine mercy. I was taught empathy, and I disregarded it, stuck in my own emotions. But how are you? Are you okay? I'm gonna head to bed pretty soon, but I wanted to check on you. I've got my companions with me, but you're in this alone, and you don't have to be. I'm sorry."
She looks up, and there's some big tears welling up in her eyes, and she says, I thought things were right and wrong, and that if Mask declared it, no one would oppose. Mask is supposed to be a god.
They're all gods.
What is even right and wrong if they can just fight it out and then I can just lose? I was trying to do the right thing."
"I know, and it's the translator's jobs to make those kind of decisions, and then they didn't. They left it to us."
"What a horrible job."
"Yeah, it seems like it would be pretty stressful, huh?"
"I didn't even know the world worked like this."
"I don't think any of us did."
"I'm a bad acolyte. I am supposed to represent the spirit of youthful rebellion. I'm supposed to represent the force of change in the world, and I didn't even know what was possible. I'm supposed to be fresh eyes to the world, and I couldn't have even guessed."
"Well, hey, what's better youthful rebellion than ignoring the people telling you what to do?"
She smiles and then thinks about it for a second. And then you see her head start to nod in aggressive agreement.
"Well, I'm wiped. I'm going to head to bed. I just, I wanted to apologize. You're welcome with us, even if we don't know what we want to do yet.
I don't know what I can do. You're really powerful. You're further along than me, and I'm really frustrated by that, because that is also against the teachings of Mask. I am supposed to be self-sufficient and powerful in my own right, and I'm not. I'm just not.
Yeah, you are. Or you can be, even if you don't feel like you are right now.
Creedon, I didn't get through those challenges. My mentor walked me through those challenges, and she died to get me to the bottom floor. You walked through the challenges, and you're fine.
Well, I walked through it with two other people that are smarter than me. One of them's like 700 years old. And I'm pretty sure that we might have cheated on a couple of them, too.
Creedon, I just realized how small I am tonight. Did you ever have one of those moments where you suddenly realize just how little you are?
Every day.
I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep.
Well, this might help. Wait, you're a teenager. Never mind. I should take back the bottle of vodka she was about to
Oh, just let her have some.
She's like, what, 3 years younger than Creedon? Like, Creedon, 20 years old, so wise, talking to an 18-year-old.
That's right, you're not that much older
than
she
is. No, I'm not. I'm 20. I'm a 20-year-old human. Two gods at my back and a panther.
She thinks of you as much wiser. Yeah, she just stares off into the fire and seems to nod off where she's sitting.
Yeah, okay. Creedon takes her bottle of vodka away and goes to bed.
Okay. When morning rolls around, you realize that you're far enough north, the sun is not coming up at usual times, and the snow has blotted out the windows. You have no idea what time it is. But when you open the front door to the church in your friendly new winter clothes, you are greeted with a pretty amazing sight. I wrote some box text here that I'm going to now read to you.
Yeah.
In the heart of the frozen glaciers, surrounded in eternal winter, lies the fantastical city of Trey Bay. This breathtaking metropolis is crafted almost entirely from glistening, translucent ice, its structures shimmering like diamonds above the pale winter sun. Towering in the city's center is a majestic, great frozen tree, its branches sprawling skyward, encased in a thick layer of sparkling frost. The tree serves as both a beacon and a sanctuary, and seems to radiate ancient magic. The streets and the buildings of Trey Bay curve and flow organically, mirroring the natural elegance of the frozen landscape. Inhabiting this icy wonderland is a diverse tapestry of fairy races, each contributing to the city's vibrancy and charm. Tiny mischievous pixies dart through the frost-laden air, their laughter tinkling like delicate chimes. Elegant winged sprites glide gracefully among the icicles, their ethereal beauty a stark contrast to the rugged majesty of the frost giants who tread solemnly through the wider boulevards. Each race, from the diminutive to the colossal, lives in harmonious unity, their unique abilities and traits intertwining to create a society that is enchanting in its resilience against the frozen lands. And everywhere you look is a reminder of the majesty of the Green Man and the power of the Earth.
Holy crap.
Yeah, good description. I love it. I love the idea of little fairies flitting around the heads of frost giants.
So without further ado, there are a few things I want to make sure you know about this city, because you would already know them. This is an Arctic city. You're in the Arctic Circle. The city is literally built into and on top of a glacier. The massive tree was born of elven magic from thousands of years ago when they first came out of the fairy gates. You know, this city has several fairy gates that lead to the realm of winter in the lands of the Fae. And you know that this is where most fairy races live and feel comfortable throughout the empire, particularly the ones that are more fairy than human these days. So you, of course, have met a Furbog. You saw a goblin. There are a lot of creatures that basically you would only see in the Feywild running around living their lives here.
But this is an Astrogarian city, though, right?
It is.
They are adhering to Astrogarian law, not Fey law.
They are, correct. There is no adherence to Fey law. There are 10 bishops, just like there are in every other city, and a mayor.
So weird.
One per god forms the Council of Elders that makes up the city's governance structure, and one of them is essentially the chairman or the mayor of that structure. But the 10 bishops are almost all fairy races here. There are very few fairy race bishops across the kingdom at large, but they are definitely the majority here. And this is the only city in the empire that is controlled by the Faded faction, which is the neutral political faction that neither wants to encourage some god's growth or preserve balance between them. They believe
what happens is the god's will.
And so this city is essentially managed by least intervention principles.
Is the Bishop of the Green Man the mayor?
The Bishop of the Green Man is the mayor because the city is considered patroned by the Green Man. And it is a Furbog druid. The other thing that I think Creedon would know, given that you are trained in Arcana at all. Are you trained in Arcana, by the way? I think you are.
I might not be. I don't know. Let me double check.
Oh, okay. We've had you roll it in the past, and you've succeeded at some rolls.
Okay, I am. I am trained in Arcana. It was just that I didn't pay attention in religion class.
Okay. So you know that throughout the Empire, divine magic is the most prominent magic, and magic that comes directly from a god is the most prominent magic. In this city, it is okay to be a sorcerer or a druid and still be considered representing your god and getting power from your god. So this is the only place in the Empire where some of these fringe spellcasters have equal access to the top rung of society.
Excellent.
Trebe is remarkably bright, considering that it is dark 14 hours a day.
Bulane definitely has her veil on.
Yeah, I feel like if you're here when the sun's out, your retinas would be seared.
A lot of these fairy races seem to be the kinds that are naturally inclined to the winter. So they have fur or some sort of supernatural frost immunity. But the ones who don't are basically dressed like a traditional Inuit. I mean, they are just covered in thick furs, snowblind glasses, that sort of thing.
I'm imagining that Creedon is just in this beautiful, sleek fur, like long trench coat sort of thing.
I think so.
It's my winter fit. Ooh, with one of those hoods that's super bushy fur around the face.
Yep.
Definitely.
I always have to explain Creedon's outfit. It's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate, can you remind us what the job was that the Archsage was sending somebody to Trebe to do?
They were sending someone to Trebe to consult the fairy gods by passing through the gate and asking the fairy gods to reveal the location of Vecna's tome, this last horcrux of Vecna's power in the realm, so that you can destroy it.
Okay, well, Zerus, I hope you did sleep.
Oh, yeah. When we wake up, like, are we all in the room?
Yep.
You are all in the room, and honestly, you sleep until you wake up, because there is no external stimulus to get you out of bed.
Zerus has to be gotten out of bed.
All right.
That bottle is empty.
Creedon usually has to be woken up, so that's just normal.
Yeah. All right. Belaine shakes you both awake. Did you successfully drink your angst?
No.
Oh, I definitely did. Oh, why?
No.
No. Okay.
But I have a better understanding of what it means that nothing matters.
In a good way or a bad way? Or does it matter?
My power's the only thing that matters. And that's good.
Remember that you do still have power.
Exactly.
It was inside you all along.
I do have power. The true power is the friends we made along the way.
May I use one of the gems you took from Bison's hoard?
Yes. What do you need?
A diamond.
I'm sure you're aware of the specialness of diamonds, but sure.
I need it to help Creedon.
I don't actually have a diamond as one of the things, unless they're just in and among the thousands of gold I got.
You prioritize gems in your grab, so there are some diamonds. Let's say there's about 200 or 300 gold worth.
Okay, how much did you need?
50 gold worth.
Okay, I'll knock 50 gold
just
off.
A small one.
Yeah. Yeah.
She will crush that in the mortar and pestle that she has with her, and then when Creedon is sitting up and somewhat awake.
Oh gosh, no, hit me now, it'll help with my head too.
She will use the diamond dust to cast greater restoration and restore Creedon's strength.
Oh, that's great stuff.
Okay.
Right up the nose, into your brain.
Yes, I love it.
Restores all of the various strange types of damage you took through the puzzles.
Oh, wait, didn't you smooch your own shadow? Isn't that how that happened?
It might have been. I don't know.
That's how it happened.
I forgot that I did that. Oh, no.
And remember, Creedon, do not smooch shadows in the future. Even your own.
Hey, I was taught to conquer problems with love, okay? See how that worked out for me.
Your Eldritch Blast is like the blown kiss of death. Just do that.
Yeah, I shouldn't have tried it after I didn't have the blast anymore. Now I just have Sacred Flame.
Another kiss of death from afar. So Boulain says, well, the Trebay errand was to try to find out the location of Vecna's book so that we can find it and destroy it. I feel like that is a separate matter from the gods at large.
I don't think so. I think it's a place to start.
Okay. So we are agreed we should still pursue that goal since we are here.
Let's find it. Let's get rid of Vecna. And then let's just work up the list. We got a book of names. Let's cross them off.
I mean, we do know that Vecna's pretty bad news. No matter what we do, I agree that this is probably a good idea.
I'll need to see the local paladins, whatever passes for paladins around here.
Well, perhaps we should talk again with the mayor about the best way to proceed, because getting the answer to this question requires crossing a fairy gate, and that is no light matter.
Wait, I left my sword and shield in my other traveling pack. Are we going to need to get another set of keys?
Another set of keys?
It was a joke about the last time we went into a more magical and fairy area.
Gotcha.
Too fast for you.
We haven't had any coffee yet.
My head's split in two.
All right. We need to pursue coffee and Silas.
So you find Silas entering the church. She nods at you and says, welcome, emissaries from Astragar. I've let the other bishops know you're in town. I know the strange daylight cycles here can make life difficult for you, and you came in at quite an hour. How can I be of service?
Well, first, thank you again for receiving us at that hour and for your hospitality.
Of course. It's what we do.
We are on a mission of a fairly delicate nature.
Okay. You don't have to tell me anything you don't want to. That's when the Inquisition showed up, they gave me the same answer. I assume you're not with them, though.
No. Yeah, no. Not for this. That is not our function here.
Okay. Well, if I can direct you anywhere, please let me know.
Boulain turns to Zerus and shrugs.
Yeah, where are the paladins outposted?
We actually have less paladins here than you're probably accustomed to.
I thought so. I need whatever passes for a quartermaster.
Ah, Virion Warborn, Bishop of Brother Ambition. He manages the militia, and there is a militia warehouse. And she points down deep into the glacier and says, that icy structure with the spikes coming off of it. You really can't miss it.
Sure, gotcha. Next, I need to know whoever knows the most about passing through the fairy gate.
Ah, well, okay. Are you going to pass through temporarily as a pilgrim? Or are you planning to emigrate to the Feywild permanently?
Definitely temporary.
Okay, yes, I have the answer for you. The Bishop of the Whispering Shepherd tends to work with people who emigrate out of the Feywild, probably knows the most about the Fey. But Seraphius Embrace, the Bishop of Divine Mercy, is the one who really works the relationship between the city on the other side of the gates and this one.
Can you repeat that name one more time?
Seraphius Embrace.
And what was the Whispering Shepherd's name? We already had that one, right?
Valeria Birth Whisper.
All right.
You can probably find both of them near the fairy gates, which are located at the northmost point of the city, the east and the west.
If you two want to get started talking to the bishops, I'll get what I need at the quartermaster and meet you there.
All right. We'll head to the gate.
At the quartermaster's, you find a large, burly human, you think? He turns around and you do realize he's got elongated canines, but otherwise just looks like a large, burly human. He says, how can I help you?
Are you Warborn, the leader of the warehouse and militia?
Yes, that's me. We've got all the supplies you'd ever need. Great. You look like a fighting man.
I am. I need some new kit. Let me turn in a few things. I will hand over a breastplate And a limestone mall.
He confusedly puts that over by a wall next to a pile of other strange weapons.
I need plate mail and a regular fighter's kit, so a sword and a shield.
Yeah, I got you back. He walks you over and says, so you're a church official. We can unlock some of the nicer things if you want.
Sure.
And he turns and points to, so among the swords and shields that flow through here, a lot of them are either leather-wrapped metal, because the metal is so cold, mm-hmm. or they're wood with leather straps. But he points to one that looks like a literal icicle, like a big sheet of ice. And he says, this one, well, a little cold to the touch, was forged in the Feywild and doesn't melt. And he flicks it, and it's real solid. It is a shield of ice.
Sure. That looks great.
And he says, I have a matching longsword.
You talked me into it.
So cool.
The plate mail is just plate mail, but it comes with lots of extra padding between the metal and your body, because goddamn, it's cold here. But he will get you suited up.
I assume it's a regular paladin slash militia kit, so it's got some iconography and other things.
There is a symbol of a massive tree growing out of a mountain of ice that's been engraved in the front of it, and that is the symbol of Trebe, but it's not anything terribly special. It's just there, and it blends in with the plating pretty well. So, like, you can tell it's supposed to be something, but it's overlookable. Subtle.
Yeah, this will work for now. Thank you.
And that's how he became Zerus, the ice warrior of apathy.
Man, you're going to be in good company in the winter quarter of the Fae.
Oh, yeah. Now that we're starting to deal with Fae, I just want to throw out a reminder to Nate that I have blind sense. And if anybody is hidden or invisible within 10 feet of me and I can hear them, I know about it.
Sure.
I will also grab a large furry winter cloak.
Yeah.
Done.
Fur gang.
Yep, he hooks you up. You trade in your loot. He gives you some nice stuff. None of it is technical. Well, okay. I can't say it's not magical. It was made with magic, but it is not itself inquiring of any benefits or bonuses.
As a parting gift, I will give him 100 gold of gems.
He says, thanks. That'll keep us good and funded through the rest of the summer.
I appreciate your help, and I want to give you this tip. Your ambition is to be admired, but your god is not. And if you truly want to find power and truly want to become the best you can be, you should start to look inward instead of outward.
Roll me persuasion.
Oh, spouting heresies now.
I rolled a 2, and I will let you know with my current build, that's a 14.
Jesus.
Whoa. He looks at you strangely for a minute and says, to be honest with you, that's not 100% contradictory with the faded philosophies that we adhere to in the city. I'll take it under an advisement.
Whatever happens is the will of the gods. So if your faith in yourself occurs, then it was meant to be.
He nods and says, I agree. Good to meet you, brother. And he gives you a sort of arm slug. And as you're leaving, he also says, by the way, it's really bitchin' cold out there, so your hat looks great. And he hands you a small bag of jerky that looks like it might be resistant to freezing.
Aww. I appreciate you. Thanks, Warborn.
He nods.
And I'll head to meet them at the gates.
All right, Creighton.
Ileana's going with us, right?
You have to say she is. She's...
Oh, okay. I want to buy her some warm clothes regardless.
She gets equipped with some warm clothes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Silas gave us warm clothes.
She just looks so cold. I'm going to buy her more fashionable stuff than the freebies from the lost and found bin at the church.
Yeah. You hook her up.
She looks great now.
She's got that hipster cold look.
As far as whether she's coming with us, I think Boulain would be in favor of giving her the choice of whether she wants to come with us or not.
I spend 5 gold on her outfit.
Nice. She looks great, actually. Yeah. She says, I don't know. I'm not sure I'd be helpful to you.
Can you fight?
I have some healing magic that I've gotten the hang of.
That sounds awesome. She did mention she's not as powerful as us. We might have to be careful.
All right, so we're heading to the gate, which I'm assuming people can direct us to.
Yeah, so there's the big gate in the north, which is probably where you go first. You march through the whole town, and there are literal frost giants here, only a couple of them. but they make quite a impression as they stride over the top of you, gingerly trying not to step on you through the streets.
So polite.
But when you arrive, there is an interesting sight. So standing basically in front of this massive, massive archway, easily big enough that a giant could walk through it standing upright, it is carved out of pure ice and almost looks like it was worn naturally. Like there's no artistry to it. It just happens to be like a hole of in ice that has been left standing here. And there's a small, I don't know, checkpoint box almost in front of it. And standing on the top of this desk is a little 3.5-inch tall, bearded, pig-snouted creature with this light hovering around its head. And it looks up at you and says, hello?
Hi.
I'm handling immigration services as well as any kind of cross-fey heritage information and sagery. Are you you immigrants or pilgrims?
I think we're just looking for a visa.
Oh, well, there's no paperwork, so you're in luck. I just, depending on what you're going for, I want to prepare you, because fairies are different.
Yes. We were sent from Astrogar to inquire of the Fae some answers to some questions we have.
Okay.
Can you give us any advice?
Well, I can give you a number of bits of advice. So through this gate lies the twilight city of Ybirt. It's Trebe backwards. And Ybirt has been stuck, I guess, in perpetual twilight for a few decades. Time works a little differently when you cross the line, so just be prepared when you come back. You may not know what day it is. That's normal. Anyway, that city is not ruled by the church, but it has a church location where that really just, it represents the 10 gods on the mortal realm, but really it possesses the two avatars, the avatar of eternal knowledge and the avatar of eternal cycle. They represent those gods from that temple. They're, of course, not allowed to be worshipped on this side, so any iconography you find has to be purely for collector's purposes and cannot represent an active religious function.
Understood.
Otherwise, it's a lovely city. It's mostly populated by people like me and then the Eladrin, the precursor to the elven race, the ones that truly live in the Fae and are immortal. By the way, immortal in this concept simply means they don't age, so watch yourself. They're not any more or less fragile than a person. So every city is ruled by a Fae lord. They use noble terminology over there, and you will frequently find there are kings and gods. And the two terms are often used to describe anyone of sufficient power. So the Fae have unusual beliefs, including the ability of anyone to become a god. We, of course, know that that is blasphemy. But I wouldn't make a big issue of it when you get across the gate, because, well, you'll be very outnumbered.
I do not believe that will be a problem.
Good, good.
when we explain that to our third companion when he gets here.
Indeed, indeed. So this gate opens according to the cycle of the moon, and then the gates are each open at a different phase. So I sit at the north gate because that's where most tourists arrive, but the west gate is the one that will open when you try to pass through it. There is a small guard posted there, which greets anybody who comes in and out. We have no restrictions on leaving or going. The city honors all in whatever stage of existence they're in. But you should definitely pack for cold weather, because if you think it's cold here, it's real cold there.
What can you tell us of the Archfey that live just along the other side?
Oh, the Lord? Well, Lord Ilarion, I believe, was a prince in the court of eternal knowledge. So the gods on the Fey realms are much more likely to come and be present in the world through avatars and the such. And when they do, they hold an old school knights and nobles court. It's a fanciful, archaic practice. Anyway, he was in the court of eternal knowledge and, of course, was given a city to rule in eternal knowledge's domain, the spot that he rules and owns. Anyway, legend has it he's had a falling out a few centuries back, though, and rules the city separately from eternal knowledge as he can. So watch yourself.
Do you know the nature of the falling out?
Well, eternal knowledge is a god of pacts and bargains. His followers tend to be fairy lawyers called oathsmiths. Prince Eleron is a lawyer and oathsmith, and I gather that he has made it impossible for someone else in the court to fulfill one of their oaths. However he did that, it's unclear. But eternal knowledge did not find that to be a wise decision. Since the falling out, the city has been stuck in perpetual twilight. Time doesn't quite move there in a way.
So eternal knowledge has punished the town with frozen time.
It's possible. I don't claim to understand the rules of the Feywild. I just accept them as they are. And I've lived mostly on this side of the gate for my whole life, so best not to ask too many questions about how the sun moves in the sky over there. You'll lose your mind trying to figure it out.
All right. We had been given to understand we might talk to Seraphius Embrace.
Oh, yes. Well, Seraphius is actually my father. You'll probably find him at the open gate, the west one.
All right. Well, we will look for him there.
Yes, his nose is just a tad more upturned, and he keeps his beard in a braid.
We will look for those features.
Excellent. Yes, well, watch out for him. He'll try to stay about chest high so he doesn't get stepped on.
All right. Thank you, Valeria, for your help.
Indeed.
All right. And I guess we'll regroup with Xeris and head for the west gate.
Yeah. Do we need to go through the north gate?
Well, the west gate is the one that's going to be opening.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
The west gate is the one that is open.
But wasn't that conversation at the north gate?
Yes. You were at the north gate because that's the big gate.
Oh, okay.
They told you that if you want to actually go to the Feywild, you got to go to the west gate.
Okay, okay, okay. I'm getting with it now. There's too many gates.
And you were talking to a family member of Seraphis and Brace, who did not introduce themselves.
Well, we were told.
You were told Valeria would be around here. And when you called them Valeria, they didn't correct you.
Great. So if Xeris meets us on the way to the west gate, we'll give him the briefing rundown of how things are there, that it's perpetual twilight. Gods and kings are terms thrown around loosely. Don't think anything of it. Maybe don't question it too hard.
Sure.
And eternal knowledge and eternal cycle are the rulers of the day, and the ruler of the city has had a falling out with eternal knowledge, so we want to stay away from that topic. That's spicy.
Oh, interesting. If it's going to be eternal twilight over there, I guess I'm just going to be lunar mode the whole time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it easy.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to find Seraphius.
So yeah, when you get over there, Seraphius is visible. Not only is there the little guardhouse podium that you saw before, but there's actually a little auditorium that's been crafted with a stage and some seating. And he is currently giving a lecture on the nature of the Feywild to a group of interested pilgrims who are going to cross today. There's about four pilgrims who are sitting, freezing their asses off from Astragar, who are looking to go learn more about church lore in the Feywild temporarily.
Do we just file in and listen?
Seems like a rational thing to do. He's talking rather in depth about the nature of fairy pacts and agreements, and encouraging everyone to make no agreements of any kind, but if you must, make sure it is a trade that resolves entirely in the moment and has no long-term strings attached. Otherwise, you'll be perceived as a mark for fey shysters.
Caden looks so nervous.
Just don't talk. Just don't say anything.
Anyway, he's finishing his How to Stay Safe in the Fey Realm lecture and says, okay, through the gate you go. Just be careful. It's very cold on the other side. And he hops off the little lectern and points at the gate. And the first person looks at it and says, is it on? And he says, oh, it will be. Just walk right on through. And the first pilgrim steps through, and there is a brilliant flashlight, and they're just gone. They are not here anymore.
Bishop Seraphius?
Yes, yes. How can I help?
Hi, my name is Boulain. This is Xeris in Cretan.
Hello.
Hi. We were sent from Astragar, tasked with crossing over into the Fae, to ask some fairly delicate questions about some fairly esoteric knowledge. Can you tell us who we might be seeking out.
Well, I think you're going to go talk directly to the avatars. The church is not as bureaucratic on that side. So you're basically going to head to the base of their massive clock tower. And to the left of the clock tower is a large stone building with stained glass. And go in there.
All right.
There's probably just a couple of people.
Are we to expect they will be bargaining for this information?
I've never negotiated with them for anything directly, but probably not so much a bargain as a favor to be paid before you receive whatever it is you're looking for.
All right. We just want to know what to expect.
Oh, not to worry. As far as the Fae go, the divine avatars understand that their influence in the mortal realm is considered unacceptable. And so they're unlikely to create pacts that last past the fairy gate with you if they want to continue a positive relationship with the church, which they do.
Good to know.
Why do they? I suppose I'm confused as to why the Feywild. This might be an out-of-character thing that Creedon just knows, but is there... I suppose it's just interesting that there's like actually an alliance that's established between these places, given that the Fae realm always seems so full of heresies and stuff. Like, are they worried about an invasion or?
No, it's not a fear of war or anything. It's how best to put it? Good fences make good neighbors, and there are three holes in our fence.
Yeah, okay.
It's important that people continue to have the right to move between. And that systems are in place to allow this in a positive way and that trade can continue, etc. Not that the winter realms are particularly resource rich for trade, because they're not, but who wants an enemy of a god, I say? And why do the gods do anything? I don't know. You'd have to ask the avatars. Maybe they can fill you in on why.
They don't know either.
Who's to say? Maybe they do it for fun.
What happens will happen.
I think Boulay takes stock of Xeris's new digs and says, those are impressive.
Yeah, I felt it was time for an upgrade on armor. I keep getting hit.
Yeah, I can understand that. Are they going to stay intact when we are not in the Arctic?
I've been told they will.
Oh.
It's going to tear the fur off.
She's talking about the icicle.
I'm talking about the
back.
Ice weapons.
Oh, those. Okay,
the ice sword and shield.
Oh, those are not hidden?
No.
They don't go anywhere.
Oh, yeah, cool.
I have a uncharacteristic glacier of a shield strapped to my back and a sword made of ice, but you can't see just a hilt and a scabbard. That's unusual.
All right, well, try not to bargain, try not to kill anything, shall we?
You step through the gate.
Ugh, Creedon definitely goes last.
The book and the orb of the waning mind pass from the material realm to the realm of the Feywild, forgotten for the moment in the packs of our heroes. A capricious whim that would make the most erratic Fae blush. But our heroes could not have known what havoc they would reap upon this alien realm should they degrade the power of its greatest names, even a little. The power of a god pulses its energy across the Feywild like ripples in a pond. The memory of 1,000 powerful Fae who once thought to make themselves into gods among men wanes in the minds of uncountable multitudes. Each name in the book is forgotten by any too weak to resist. Pacts begin to unravel as the Fae forget their oaths, boons and banes alike. The very nature of this world begins to wrinkle. And a sound like splintering glass is heard by those powerful enough to feel the ripple coming. For now, the tapestry holds unshattered, but for some, it will never be the same. And the ripple will pulse again. According to the rules of a celestial phenomena, too convoluted for the mortal mind to imagine, in the ancestral ward of summer breeze, the land forgets its master. It becomes untethered and reverts to chaos. The stagnant swamps that reside under an oppressive summer heat forget the breeze that left it to spare its aching heart and remembers its first self. Its plants and creatures wither and die. Mountains become pebbles, pebbles become oceans and oceans become void. The Queen of Summer responds to this unraveled space of epochs past and asserts her agreements upon it, forging it again to verdant green, birthing in an instant a new population. She stops the motion of the heavens to prevent further damage. It would seem the mortals never learned all her names, and as a bonus, they accidentally solved her Hanzo Lunari problem. The Queen of the Beast Within Man, the Court of Thorns, and the Circle of the Moon is safe for the moment. Her attempts to bring Fenrir to her realm also brought her realm to Fenrir. The power of the book pauses for just a moment at the boundaries of her realm, while the universe debates her fate. Her name is in the book many times in many ways, for her attempts to become a god are well known, and her enemies well connected to the church. In this moment's hesitation, she extends the few breaths she has left into the years she will need to escape this fate. The mantle of power she carries must be passed to another to save what she has built. She knows just the creature for the job, but it will take time to bring Sable back from the mortal realm, and to convince her to choose her fey nature over her human one. But time is a relatively simple thing for a fey of her power. Beneath a perpetual twilight sky, there exists a mere version of Tre Bay, known as Ebert. This enigmatic city, bathed in soft, ethereal glow of endless dusk, presents a stark contrast to its icy counterpart. Instead of ice, the buildings here are constructed from dark, iridescent stone that absorbs the twilight hues, casting a mystical aura over the city. Dominating the skyline is an immense, intricately designed clock tower, its face aglow with a soft amber light that punctuates the dim surroundings. The tower's grandiose gears and cogs, visible through translucent panels, move in a mesmerizing and perpetual dance, normally. Today, the clock is stopped. The streets of Ebert are lined with elegant, slender structures, their architecture a harmonious blend of Gothic and Elven design covered in snow. Inhabitants of the mirrored realm are primarily Eladrin fairy elves, renowned for their grace and wisdom. They move through the city with a fluid, almost dance-like elegance, their presence adding a serene dignity to the ambiance. These elves, with their keen eyes glinting in the twilight, are adept in the mystical arts. Their enchantments and spells weave through the city's very fabric like whispered secrets. The atmosphere here is one of tranquil, almost dreamlike contemplation, a stark contrast to the lively and bustling Tre Bay, but equally captivating in its somber beauty and mystical allure. Let's go ahead and start off with what happened for your character at level 9. Tell us about yourself.
Sure. Well, after rejecting Nodig, I decided to become a paladin. So I'm now a paladin of vengeance, with the thought that maybe I'm doing this on my own. So for the moment, I think I'm just my own power. And yeah, I got the ability to smite my foes like a paladin and to abjure my enemies because I'm a vengeance paladin. I got some spells.
Okay.
Including Hunter's Mark. Let's go.
Oh, interesting.
Wild. Claire, what's up with you?
Wild.
Creedon had her proficiency bonus go up to 4, but the big stuff is 5th level spells. So during the daytime, when she is a divine soul sorcerer, she is going to have access to Bigby's Hand. And in the nighttime, when she is a lunar sorcerer, she will have telekinesis.
Nice. So you're hands-free at night.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I feel like this is a spell that was built especially for Creedon's slightly lazy nature.
You know, it is really good for that. It can be really good for, like, stealing stuff if we need to, which I thought might be helpful since, you know, dealing with Fae and sneaking around. Maybe I need to throw this artifact through the portal or something. I don't know. I'm coming prepared.
Boulain, what do you got?
Hit point maximum of 70. My proficiency bonus is 4. And I, too, got 5th level spells. I got 2 that were grave domain features. But one that I don't want. So I don't think I'm going to use it. I don't know if you'll let me trade it out for something else, but...
Okay, maybe.
Looking at the anti-life shell, like, I just don't think that jives with her entire, I don't know, spiritual ethos. Makeup. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I can either just not use it, or I could try to find something else to replace it. Yeah, so she's got some options on 5th level spell slots that she can pick from each day, including Commune, Flame Strike, Greater Restoration, and Mass Cure Wounds, and Raise Dead.
As you cross into the twilight city of Ebert, Creedon, you lose your connection with the sun god. While you are here in this city, you will have twilight powers. You will be your moon god form. And then, interestingly enough, if you leave this city, in each short rest, you can choose to go back to your moon god sorcerer form, because the moon goddess is really powerful here, and the sun god is not.
Okay. If we leave this area... I can choose to stay in?
Yes.
Okay.
It's twilight now, so you're forced into your nighttime format. But if you leave this city and you go somewhere where it's not twilight all the time, you can still choose in any short rest to go back to your moon sorcerer. The moon goddess is way more powerful on the face side than the sun god, and so you are being tipped in a direction.
All right, all right. This will be a good chance to use more of my moon powers that don't come up very much.
Boulain, you are in a realm without death.
Oh.
So.
So I am powerless here?
No, not quite. You seem to be pulling together power, but not nearly with the ease that you used to. So your grave domain powers, anything associated with grave domain, mm-hmm. including your bonus spells, you don't get those.
Okay. Ouch. Okay.
So okay. If you die here, what happens?
I was going to say, people can die in the Fae, right? I mean, they just don't age.
They don't age, and their souls are not taken to the afterlife. They are recycled here and now by a world of weird historic agreements unknowable by man.
Okay, gotcha.
So your soul is not brought here by the Whispering Shepherd, nor is it stolen away from here by the Silent Judge.
She never steals anything. Come on.
I'm hearing I could be reincarnated as, like, a water nymph.
Don't call my goddess a thief.
Xeris, your powers seem to be weirdly unaffected. It's as if there isn't a god attached to them.
Ooh.
I love it.
And that brings us to the city. No sooner do you step out of the gate do you hear a chorus of people shouting in your direction. Guide here! Guide for sale! Guides, come here! I'll be your guide. One sort of strides up into the front of them. This is an Eladrin, so they have elf ears that come to a point of frost that rolls over them just all the time, because you are clearly in the lands of winter, and their eyes sparkle twilight. What makes this guy interesting is that he has a lute, and he'll stride forward and say, I got these ones, get out of here. The 4 or 5 other people who are wishing to be your guides to veer off suddenly. This person says, so... how can I be of service to you?
Where's the clock tower? That's what we're looking for, right? A clock tower?
There is a giant clock tower, yes. We should probably start with the basics, though, don't you think?
What do you think we should know?
Well, first thing I think you should know is that my name is Thistledown, and I am a performer.
I'm Xeris. I thought you were a guide.
When I'm not guiding people, I entertain.
What can you play?
Mm-hmm.
A variety of wonderful music to accompany this lovely atmosphere. The second thing I think you should know is the rules of this city.
Sure.
Seems useful.
Excellent. I will inform you of those. While you are here, the rule of reciprocity applies. That means that if someone gives you something, you must give them something in kind. It's sort of a preventative of theft.
How does that prevent someone from taking something because it wasn't given?
Well, if someone takes something from you, then you are owed an equivalent by that person. In other words,
I see.
The universe will enforce a kind of justice.
So are you planning on charging us for this information?
Not yet. No. I need something else from you. But first, the second law, hospitality. If you are invited in to a place, you are expected to be hospitable, and the host is expected to be hospitable to you. It is a mutually assured safety pact. Should you violate this, the universe will mete out justice. With the laws out of the way, please tell me you are not pilgrims, because you do not look like pilgrims.
What do you mean the universe will take justice?
Okay, hold on. Let me put this into human terms.
Who is the universe?
Eternal knowledge. You may hear him referred to as the king of eternal knowledge. It has the power to control pacts and bargains. And unfortunately, that is, or fortunately, depending on who you are, that is the nature of all things in the Feywild. Everything is a pact or a bargain. The fact that you feel cool breezes is afforded to you by some ancient fairy's agreement.
I see. Cool.
Again, are you pilgrims?
We are not pilgrims.
Not exactly.
Wonderful. So you're here for a reason, and that reason, when I know it, will be payment for my services as a guide.
All right.
Our reason for being here will be his payment.
That's what he said.
The knowledge of that reason.
Ah, I see.
What I heard to understand. Am I misunderstanding that?
To be clear, you will get to keep the knowledge, but you will share it with me.
But no physical item, just knowledge.
Correct.
Creedon is panicking.
Billy's not panicking. Mandy's panicking because I'm trying to remember what exactly we came here to do. We're looking for information on the book, right?
Yeah, we're trying to find the book. Oh, God, I have its name written down somewhere.
Of Vecna.
Our big bet. Of Vecna, yeah.
Okay, but there was somebody in particular we needed to ask about that, right?
All of the gods in the mortal realm are having trouble, apparently, seeing through the god of secrets, secrets. You were told to come here and ask the fairy gods, of which there are two, Eternal Knowledge and Eternal Cycle. They have a church here, supposedly.
Okay, and I have a name.
Lord Ilarion is the master of this city.
And we were advised to talk to him, though, in particular, right?
You were told he was the master of this city.
Okay.
It sounds like we should just start with going to the temples. Do we need a guide? It's probably not a bad idea. Why were you so eager to guide us?
What do your services entail?
Well, I will guide you around and fill you in on any political issues that you may encounter while you are here in the city.
How y'all feel about that?
I do not think that could hurt.
I do think it would be useful, but I wonder. I'm having difficulty with any kind of trust here.
It's not undue.
Then let's just try to get straight to our objective.
Mm-hmm.
And get out of here.
All right, Thistledown, we are here because we need to visit the temple.
Interesting. You're going to play coy. Well, I will accept that as payment for the information I have offered you, and I will walk to the temple, and you may follow me.
Thank you.
And Thistledown begins walking straight there. As you cross the streets, the people seem to move with this sort of eloquence that's almost dreamlike, with this sort of unnatural grace crossing through this city of dark stone. You realize it seems to be made of two distinct types of fae. There are winter aladrin. They are hyper elves, if you will, decorated in trappings of winter with sort of frost in their hair permanently. And then there's this sort of gloomy, quiet group. Again, they look very elven, but they're just a little shorter. And everywhere they go, there's just this aura of tired.
Thistledown.
Yes.
Why is that group so gloomy and tired looking?
Oh, those are the Onomancers. Well, they're not all Onomancers, but they are dream elves, if you will.
Mm.
They're attracted to the twilight and are in league with Lord Ilarion.
Why do they look so sad?
It's their nature.
Ah.
You will find that winter aladrin, and also most winter creatures, are a sorrowful lot. Anyway, to your left, you will see a lovely place where you can get all kinds of the local customs. And he points to a tailoring shop. And they have after-hours meetings that you might call a salon for the intellectuals. A little while later, he points over to the right and says, here you will find the boarding house. Now, you will note that your gems and your coinage, or as we call them here in the city, corrid kibble, are pretty much worthless here. They sort of grow on trees in a very literal way, making them somewhat pointless. But the Lord Alarion, in all of his wisdom, has decided that as long as mortals are visiting, there is a free location to stay. And it is right there, the boarding house.
What's the usual charge?
Well, you know, a certain amount of services, or perhaps the color of your eyes, maybe the strength of your right pinky finger for the duration of your stay, those sort of things.
Free indeed.
But now it's free. No agreements required.
You don't have to agree. There's a law of reciprocity.
The law of reciprocity applies generally to all interactions. However, there is one light exception, which is in the confines of the church, which is dedicated to mortal pilgrims, you will find people more free and willing to simply give. And then in the boarding house, you will find that you may stay there and sleep there. You will find no one here sleeps, though. We find it so strange that your people give up your consciousness for like a third of the day. Whose idea was that? That's a terrible agreement.
I agree a third of the day is an obscenely long time, but to each their own.
Indeed, indeed. And he points out a few other places, basically saying, oh, don't go there. They'll charge you your literal eyesight that you folks don't want to try to negotiate with those folks. And he points to a few other places and tells you to not go there. But you arrive at a chapel. It is clear that just down the block is a massive-ass clock tower. And then right behind that is a castle, almost. Like, not a very big one. More like a keep. And he says, welcome to the center of town. And in the center of town, you will find our church. And he walks up to the doors and says, now, this concludes our guide agreement. The information I have provided you has been paid for with the information you provided me. If you need additional guide services, please look for me. However, I will be much more strict in my wording next time.
Understood.
And you can walk into the church.
What did he call them? What kibble?
Corrid kibble. That's right, if you make me a nature check, I can tell you what that means.
Well, I have some guesses, but yeah.
I'll try.
I got an 11.
I got a 19.
I got a 17.
17 and 19 are both enough to know that a corrid is a type of fairy creature made of stone who eats rocks. So your golden gems have been called kibble for these rock-eating creatures.
Thistledown, if you have any corrid to just brighten their day of, I give this to you freely, and I'll just hand him a gold.
Delightful! You know what you should do instead? Inside the door, there is a little fountain. Now, I believe it's called the Fountain of Offerings, but we all call it the Corrid Kibble Fountain. You see, they ask for an offering, and those of you from the mortal realm are constantly throwing in these adorable pebbles. How did you get them so flat?
We smashed.
Fascinating.
There are peoples whose jobs it is to smash these pebbles flat.
I believe they melt and pour them, but, you know, no matter.
Fascinating.
They get them to their approximate shape, and then they smash them flat with the image.
What a strange thing to do with rocks, and what a tedious job. Well, I look forward to future discussions and all of your guide needs. And he hands you your coin back.
Thanks. An equal exchange.
Everyone use. And that is our episode today. Special thanks to Todd Ferguson of My Pet Machine and Julie at Elaborate Flight of Fancy. You can find links to them in our show notes. Don't forget to support your local artists and leave us a rating and review. What will our heroes find in the Feywild? Find out next time on Carrots and Suffering, a D&D Odyssey.